I'm Vermont Edition producer Matthew Smith, and I wanted to let you know the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity, so we saved you some time to get right to the good stuff. Thanks for listening, and enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. The special investigation into Russian efforts to influence the 2016 presidential election has uncovered a sophisticated and comprehensive effort to discredit the campaign of Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton, both during the Democratic primary and during the general election. There are also concerns that Russian operatives have the capability of hacking into individual state voting systems to change the outcome of elections. Senator Bernie Sanders says the time has come for the federal government to allocate hundreds of millions of dollars to the individual states to ensure that their voting systems are secure.
You provide resources to states all over this country to protect their voting mechanism. And that is to make sure that when people in Vermont or in California cast a vote, that that vote is adequately counted. I think there's got to be a paper trail. To tell you the truth, I'm conservative enough to think we should do what Canada does in national elections, go to paper ballots. You know, we can make sure then there is not cyber attacks against our voting systems.
So how secure is Vermont's voting system? Are there steps that could be taken to make it even stronger? These are some of the questions we have today for Vermont's top elections official, and that would be Secretary of State Jim Condos. Great to have you back.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And a little later in the program, we'll hear from Montpelier City Clerk John Odom and get his thoughts about ballot and election security at the local level. So, Secretary Condos, for the last months, we've had these allegations of Russian meddling in the 2016 presidential election. Now we have indictments that have been handed down against more than a dozen Russians, charging them with a pretty sophisticated effort to manipulate voters during the election. What were your thoughts when you heard about these indictments?
Well, as a matter of fact, I was actually in a classified briefing in D.C. last Friday, when the indictments came down, and they very briefly told us about them. But in any case, it certainly takes off the table the discussions of certain individuals who have said that it's a hoax and a witch hunt, and I think that at this point everyone should be on the same page that we have to do everything in our power to secure our elections infrastructure.
And as you looked at those indictments and you heard information about them at your briefing, what troubles you the most?
Well, I think the fact that the voting is the very core, the very basis of our democracy, and our citizens need to know, need to believe that our voting systems have integrity, that we will have fair and accurate elections. And I think there are many best practices that we can do going forward across the country. Vermont's already is considered one of the leaders in this area, but there are other states that could use some help.
According to the indictments, there were some pretty comprehensive efforts to interfere in the elections process. Here's Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein.
In order to hide the Russian origins of their activities, the defendants allegedly established hundreds of accounts on social media networks such as Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, making it appear that those accounts were controlled by persons located in the United States. They used stolen or fictitious American identities, fraudulent bank accounts, and false identification documents. The defendants posed as politically and socially active Americans, advocating for and against particular candidates.
They used a lot of stolen personal voter information. Is this one of the reasons why that you were opposed to making this kind of information available to the federal government?
Absolutely. Mainly because their own when they initially formed that commission, they wanted everything sent to them by email. It was not a secure email. The servers were not secure. And so the initial take on this was one that I think and frankly, you can look across the country. It was red states and blue states. There were conservative secretaries and liberal secretaries who opposed this grab by the federal government because of issues that to protect their privacy of their citizens.
We got this email from Catherine, who wrote us, as a Vermont resident, you can register to vote online at the Vermont Department of Motor Vehicles or through your town or city clerk's office. Is it not possible that the DMV website could be hacked by someone wanting a list of aspiring voters, a list that could include addresses and social security numbers?
I can't speak directly for DMV, but you don't actually register. The actual process is not completed at DMV. The actual process is completed with our office and our 246 town clerks around the state. And I have to tell you that our town clerks are some of the hardest working individuals in local government. And it's really, really they are struggling to make sure that their systems, that their databases are protected, and we're doing everything we can to help them.
We did get this post from Mark, who says, we don't want to have cyber meddling with Vermont elections, but then Mark goes on to say that he thinks that Vermont has a haphazard menagerie of voting systems. I'm not sure what he means by that.
I'm not sure either, because in 2015, we went live with our complete new elections management system. Prior to 2015, there were literally five different modules that were all different and operated separately. Now it's all one system, and we have upgraded it. We have done extensive training with all the town clerks, and it's really just one system at this point.
So do you feel pretty good about the security of Vermont's system right now?
I'm as confident as we can be. Anybody that tells you that there's 100% guarantee that nobody can hack in, they're misinformed. I mean, the bad actors are constantly evolving, so what they did yesterday will be different from what they do today and what they do tomorrow. What we have to do is focus and be diligent about the actual issues of protecting the data that we have and making sure that we use best practices and that we're in position to fend off these attacks.
How hard would it be for someone to hack into Vermont's statewide checklist?
I think it would be very difficult. I say that with slightly a tongue-in-cheek, because we've put in place the parameters that we need, the firewalls, the monitors. We monitor our system every day. I do want to correct one thing that you said, Bob, and that is the issue of actually changing vote. The FBI, the Department of Homeland Security, all over the weekend, they came out. We challenged them, and they came out and publicly stated that in their knowledge, not one vote was changed in the 2016 election, which is something that most of the election directors or all of the election directors believed. So it's very, very difficult to actually change a vote tally, because the systems that are used are not connected to the internet by either hardwire or Wi-Fi, and someone would have to go to individual towns, break into the town office, break into the vault, find the memory card, and then reconfigure it, and then put it all back and get out before anybody knew about it. It just isn't going to happen, because it's such a decentralized system across this country. Where there are concerns are those states that are still using what are called touchscreen vote tabulators or vote systems, where there is no paper ballot. Vermont has a paper ballot. We've always had a paper ballot. It's required in statute that we will have a paper ballot, and that goes for voting at the town offices or voting via overseas and military vote personnel as well.
So you said the state of Vermont is constantly monitoring this situation of people who might be trying to hack into the system. Are there people trying to hack in?
Every system that's on the internet is someone's trying to get in. And essentially, what I will say is this. The analogy is that in most cases, they're just scanning systems. And it's similar to someone walking up to your home, trying the doorknobs and see if there's anything open, looking through the windows to look for vulnerabilities. We are constantly – we see those types of actions, but we monitor it. We blacklist certain IP addresses, coming from certain countries, and we're constantly looking at how we can improve. We've got firewalls. We've got monitors in place, and it's a daily regimen at this point.
Could you give us a sense of how often it happens?
You mean the actual scans?
Well, that somebody's trying to get in. You mentioned.
Well, I wouldn't trying to get in or just scanning. I think it's.
Well, let's just say scanning.
Okay, scanning. We probably have in the thousands per day.
Thousands
per day of people trying to scan our system.
And by scanning the system, you're saying they're looking for a way in?
They're looking for a way in. They're looking in the windows. They're looking, trying the doorknobs to see if anything is open. And, you know, we feel pretty good that we've got everything locked down in pretty good shape. And as I said, we monitor on a constant basis.
And when you have so many, I'm surprised to hear thousands. Are these pretty much automated systems?
A lot of them are. Most of them are.
Let's go to our callers and start with Julia, who's calling from Lincoln. Hi, Julia. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. I appreciate this discussion. And I've been a computer specialist for over 25 years in my professional life. And I really appreciate the efficacy, the versatility, and all of that it offers to have things in databases. But it really begs the question to me in terms of amount of effort. It's different effort, but it seems to me that for the safety of the voters, it might be just more prudent to have paper ballots and wait for the results than it is to use a computerized system that even could be hacked.
Julia, thanks very much for your phone call. We should say, so that all our listeners understand, that Vermont, as you mentioned earlier, there's a law that requires a paper ballot.
Correct.
And that no towns in the state of Vermont use that electronic system. What they do use is something called an optical scan machine, where you fill out the ballot and fill in the little holes, and then you feed that into a machine.
Correct. And it's really a tabulator. And all it does is it looks at that ballot counts the votes on that ballot. The other piece of this, which is a really important piece, is at the end of the day, or I should say at the end of the election cycle, within 30 days of that election, the general election, we will do an audit, and we will do about not quite 5%, but close to 5% of the precincts in the state. And we do an audit of top to bottom of that ballot. So we will do every race, whether if it's a presidential year, we'll start with the presidential race right down to the justices of the peace and compare those totals to what was actually reported. And we have been doing audits since 2006. On top of that, we've also have the recounts, and we've never seen a discrepancy of more than a couple of ballots here and there.
I was surprised to learn that I think that there are 14 states right now that use the electronic system without a paper trail. Do you think they're rethinking those decisions now?
Absolutely. Virginia is one that and Pennsylvania, that both the governors have issued executive orders to mandate a move to some kind of a tabulator with a paper ballot. And I think that you're going to see this happen more and more across the country. My understanding was there was about 35 to 40 states that were using paper – had required paper ballots, and that now that is being rethought. Keep in mind, a lot of this was as a result of the 2000 Florida debacle, where you know, there were many different machines in the state, and I think that some of these states, you know, at the time when the Help America Vote Act provided funding for this, changed their tabulators. Those tabulators are now starting to age out based on the frequency of their use. And any monitoring or maintenance that they do as well. And so they're starting to phase out, and they're starting to look at replacing those. And almost, I think, across the country, it's considered a best practice is to go to paper ballots.
Let's talk to Allison, who is calling from Richmond. Hey, Allison, welcome to the program.
Hi. I think the previous caller's question got at this a little bit, but my question was about the life cycle of a paper ballot. So, you know, I go to vote and someone hands me a paper ballot and then I mark my choices and then I hand it back in and I leave. And I always kind of wondered, like, what little journey does that paper ballot take from there, and how is it counted, and where does it end up?
Great question. So, first of all, let me just explain that in Vermont, we have 246 towns. Of the 246 towns, about 135 actually use what is called an optical scan tabulator. Those 135 towns represent about 80% of the vote in the state of Vermont. So the vast majority of the votes are counted by a tabulator. So what happens with your ballot is after the election's over and after they've checked through to make sure that they got all the write-ins, the boards of civil authority at the local level will look through the ballots individually at each ballot to make sure that they didn't miss something or someone didn't vote. They're looking for the intent of the voter. After they get all that done, the ballots are sealed in a bag, and those bags are then preserved for 22 months. That's a federal law. They're preserved for 22 months in the vaults of the town clerks. At the time that the 22 months is up, they will destroy the ballots.
Let's talk to Roddy in South Burlington. Hey, Roddy, what's on your mind today?
Well, so many of my questions have been answered, but I do want to ask Jim again, how many states do not have paper ballots? And also, once you're finished with that, Jim, to say, what is the history of your ethics committee? I mean, is it in operation? What are the resistance to it? If it's not, love to hear about that.
Thanks, Roddy. The question was,
how many states?
How many states
don't use paper ballots?
So it's about 10 states that don't use paper ballots at this point, and the rest of the states do use paper ballots. We also here in Vermont are for the vote tabulators. In the law, it says that we will have a uniform vote tabulator around the state, so we don't end up with different models or different systems. So we have just one system that we use here. As far as the Ethics Commission, that officially was up and running by January 1st. They've named their five commissioners, and they have a part-time executive director. So they're just building their website and building the working on the different pieces. For instance, they're supposed to have a financial disclosure form for all candidates ready for the upcoming election, and they're working on all that.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today on the program, we're looking at ballot security in the state. Is Vermont's election system secure from foreign hackers, or are there steps that could be taken to make the system more secure? With us today is Secretary of State Jim Condos. And joining us now is Montpelier City Clerk John Odom. John, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Hi, John.
Hi, Jim. How you doing?
Good.
So, John, you say that you recently dusted off your IT skills and became a certified penetration tester or a certified ethical hacker. Now, you know, when you first told me that, I thought you were kidding, but it's very serious.
Yeah.
And so tell us what it means to be a certified ethical hacker.
Well, I've been a network admin and a database admin for a handful of nonprofits, so I've had some familiarity with security from the inside out. I became, with everything that's been going on and the questions I received from constituents in my own office, I decided I wanted to look at the problem from the outside in and really get an understanding of what the threats are from the other direction. And it's been very illuminating. A certified ethical hacker is a professional penetration tester, which is, we're trained in looking for those holes. We know hacking tools, we know how to hack, and we can go in and actually try to hack a site and come up with vulnerabilities. Having said that, obviously I'm a town clerk. It's not something I do very often other than, you know, playing in some virtual servers that I've set up on Amazon. But still, it's been very illuminating and helpful, I think, to have that, some of that understanding.
Have you been able to hack into Montpelier's system?
Well, One of the tenets of penetration testing is you have to get written permission, and nobody's done that for me yet.
All right. You know, you also wrote an article, John, on ballot security for the Huffington Post, and you said, quote, should we be worried? The answer is yes and no. So let's go to the yes part. Why should we be worried about this?
Well, because it's going to happen. There is no way in this day and age, and with the interest and the threats directed at our election system, they are going to get hacked. Let's be completely clear about that. Now, I think because if we're doing everything we should do, if we're dotting our I's and crossing our T's on security, on training personnel, on you know, having the current information and the current most, you know, the best equipment in place to protect these systems, then this doesn't have to be a crisis. We've all, you know, remember the days of, lost ballot boxes, which have slowed down recounts or created some chaos in getting a final definitive result of elections. I mean, we've all seen those over the years. With the new efficiencies that we have, largely through the systems that, you know, Jim and other folks in other states have put into place, we're seeing a lot less of that. I think the hacking situation is simply going to be the modern version of that. If we're doing everything right, then it doesn't have to be more of an impediment to having fair elections, having elections we're confident in, than those lost ballot boxes. Maybe it delays in a particularly bad hack, maybe it delays the final result for a few weeks. But I think that's as bad as we have to, you know, we have to aim for, and I think that's a completely achievable goal.
So, John, when you say it's inevitable that a system is going to be hacked into, what do you mean?
Well, there's just there's so many ways to hack. And if somebody's got the patience, they're eventually going to find a way into one system or another. I mean, you think about what back in, I guess, 2016, the highest profile hacks in worldwide were at the CIA, the NSA, and Verizon, which, Verizon is one of these companies that set some of the standards for security. So, you know, the simple lesson from that is if they can be hacked, anybody can be hacked. So it's just about putting in enough security in place so that if/when we get hacked, it's an annoyance and an inconvenience and not a big problem. And I think that's totally attainable. I think you see that in place now more and more with businesses across the world. And there's no reason we can't have that kind of fault tolerance with our election systems.
And when you talk about people hacking in and it's inevitable, do you think they're going to make it as far as being able to manipulate vote totals?
Let me just say there's sort of three points of vulnerability, really, that, you know, strike me. I'm sure I missed the beginning of the program. I'm sure Jim talked about the potential for getting into voter registration systems since they're remote. And the other point of vulnerability is going to be the communication between the polling places and, you know, on election day and that final database system where the information is held. Yes, I think there is the potential for someone to get in there and mess with vote totals. But again, if we're doing everything right, then that doesn't have to be any more of an issue than the vote totals being wrong because not all the absentee ballots were counted because somebody left a box in the vault.
Montpelier City Clerk John Odom, many thanks for being on the program today. It's fascinating.
Well, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Let's talk to Thomas in Montpelier. Hey, Thomas, what's on your mind?
Hi, Bob. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Thomas.
What's on my mind has to do with the paper ballots that you've mentioned. Yes, we do have paper ballots in Vermont, and I am quite appreciative that we have the paper ballots here. My concern is that all recounts, I believe, have to be done by optical scanner with those paper ballots, and there's no way to really check the ballots against the results. And if there were, I believe, a problem with the tabulators that actually required people to look at the ballots, it would probably take a court order to do that.
So Thomas, you're partly right. The legislature did change to allow us to, or actually to allow the courts to use vote tabulators to do the recounts. But they also required that the vote tabulators that they use could not have been used in that election cycle, and there have to be new memory cards that are created for that that recount. So there are some provisions that are in there to make those changes and try to protect the vote. I think the other part of this is that every ballot is looked at during a recount. It's supposed to be done prior to actually running them through the tabulator to make sure there's nothing missing, or, you know, for instance, some people might circle the name instead of filling in the oval, or they might X the oval instead of filling it in, and the scanner may not pick that up. So they're supposed to look for that kind of ballot to see if there was a mistake that was made or a misplaced vote total on the ballot itself. So there are things in place, and I understand your concern, Thomas, and I think you were actually in the committee when we actually did back in 2000, I think it was 3 or 4, where we made sure that we put it in statute that we required a paper ballot, and I know that you supported it at that time.
Thomas, thanks for your phone call very much. Let's turn to Sister Lorien in Berlin. Sister Lorien, welcome to the program.
Thank you. My issue is about the communication between the town and the state. That seems to me the most dangerous part of this process. How is that done?
And are you thinking now of how the community tells the state what the vote totals are?
Yes.
How is that done?
So the town clerk will certify their election result, and then they send it to us over the internet. But we do have things in place that protect those that cycle. I should probably back up at this point, Bob, to just say that we did a complete cyber risk assessment starting in 2013 of the entire agency of the Secretary of State's office. And as each system has come online, and for instance, the election system is fairly new. It went live in late 2015. As each system has come up, we do penetration testing. We look at the firewalls that are in place to ensure that they're in the right place. We also, just as an example, we also do a backup, daily backup of our system, our voter registration system. So if it was to get hacked, we would be able to return quickly right back into business with that backup information.
So the local towns transmit their voter tally to the Secretary of State's office on the internet.
Well, yes, it's on the internet, but it's we're on the cloud and we use it. It's a government cloud, and we have got systems in place to protect that data as it's coming.
Let's turn to Monica, who is calling from South Burlington. Hey, Monica, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. I first just wanted to thank Jim so much for everything he does. You know, Vermont's a small state, but we can really be a leader and set a great example for the rest of the country. So thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Monica.
I also wanted to ask, you're welcome. I also wanted to ask, not sure if this is your turf, Jim, but I would like for Vermont to demand from Facebook and Twitter and such social media companies that they do an information audit and provide each Vermonter with a report that shows what maliciously intended advertising or comments or photographs did they see from accounts that we now recognize as having been created by Russia or whoever else. And I feel that every individual has a right to know that information simply so that as they go forward, they can think about what they see in the future. So I'm not sure, Jim, if that would be you or if that's a T.J. Donovan thing, but wondering how we can pursue something like that.
Well, I thank you, Monica, for that question. And we are, in fact, just at my national meeting that I was at this weekend, we had a presentation by both Twitter and Facebook, and they are working on different things to provide better security and better understanding and how to lock down certain IPs and social media accounts. We also, Vermont legislature just passed, well, actually the legislature didn't, but the House just passed a social media bill, which is moving, will now go over to the Senate, and there are some restrictions that are also placed in there for political advertising. And I can tell you that through our campaign finance system, we had a question from a reporter yesterday if we had any record of how much was actually spent online through social media, and we were able to identify a little over $900,000 that was spent on social media. Now, that doesn't mean that we got it all. It's what's been reported to us. So we do have several ways that we have information coming in, and hopefully in the future we'll be even better.
Are you surprised that the total was that high?
I was, when we actually looked at it.
Because it seems like that's a lot of political advertising.
Well, you got to look at, we had well over 400 candidates too.
Jim, we got this email from David who wrote us, I've read articles about how non-internet-connected voting machines can be entered into from afar. Some researchers even found election management computers at county offices, the machines used to tally official election results, and to program voting machines had remote access software installed on them. How secure are these counting machines?
I'm not aware of either of those instances with us. First of all, we don't have county machines. We have local town offices. As far as the vote tabulators themselves, there are two, if you want to call it, memory cards in there. One's the operating system for the scanner. One is the memory card that actually captures the vote totals. And I know of no way that anybody could actually, even from afar, get into those because they're not connected in any way by hardwire or Wi-Fi. There's no connection there. And so it would be virtually impossible unless they could actually find the memory card and reconfigure it there. You know, there was a recent it was called DEFCON, where they actually worked on they handed over these memory cards to a bunch of hackers. I suppose you could call them ethical hackers. The fact of the matter was the machines that they were using, and they even identified in their report that the village, it was called the DEFCON village, and that the village had no access to optical scan or DRE machines with a voter-verified paper audit trail. These systems and those involving ballot marking devices are the most software-independent and audible systems and are increasingly popular and heavily used. The tabulators that they were using, the memory cards that they were using, were ones that are not being used by anybody. They were old style machines, and as John said earlier, anybody can hack into anything. The question is, are you putting the right defense in place to protect it?
Let's turn to Cynthia in Calais, who has a question about these memory cards. Hi, Cynthia. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. Yes, I've been part of a group called Vermonters for Voting Integrity since the second George W. Bush, the hacking of computers happened all over Ohio. But I would like to know if Secretary Kondos knows about Harry Hursti. He's a Finnish computer expert, Harri Hursti. And he proved in front of Ion Sancho in Florida and other places in front of election officials that those memory cards can be pre-programmed to zero. And he did a whole hack in front of them to prove that the memory cards themselves I guess, do we still have LHS
yes.
doing our memory cards? Anyways, the Diebold, I don't know if they still call it Diebold, but I know in 2005 there was a very serious study done in, by the state of California, and it proved, and I've been in those committee meetings, and I have all the, you know, VTvoters.org might be a good place to check, even though it may not be updated. This information could be on there. But do you know of Harry Hursty?
I do. I'm not real familiar with him, but I do know of him.
And Cynthia, why is that important? Because you think there are ways to manipulate these memory cards?
I know it's been proven. And I also know through the study, it's a 39-page synopsis. Well, there's a five-page synopsis which says these optical scanners could be corrected, but they haven't. And we brought Jeremy Hansen to these committee meetings. He's an expert from Norwich and in computer technology, and he explained why our system was high school level hacking. And I think that was somewhat of what he said. It was like very easy to hack. And we were in both the government operations committee in both the House and Senate. And so I don't know why that's ignored. We've been doing this a long time. And, you know, it's already been proven that these memory cards can say zero. And so I feel like the questions being asked are yes, of course we need paper ballots, but I believe in those committee meetings, Jeremy was mentioning that we'd need a second kind of system to count those paper ballots that are actually optical scanner ballots. And you know, really, so it's very frustrating because this has been known since at least 2005, and we've continued, you know, there's help.
So, Cynthia, can you cite to me any place where a vote was actually changed? Because we're not aware of any.
Well,
it's one thing to say that they're capable of being hacked. It's another to say whether they have been.
Oh, well, yes. I mean, John Conyers, back in the second reelection of George W. Bush, had a 100-page document that he gave to all the House members, and it was called something like, I forget the name of how he put it, but he explained how so many things, what went wrong in Ohio, I think is part of it. And he explained and studied all of this and what happened, all of the election fraud that happened in Ohio. And it wasn't just putting more computers in the, or more voting booths in the white areas and taking them away from the, you know, black populated areas in the larger cities. It was also computers. It was also the optical scanners that were hacked. And there's affidavits and there's all kinds of information on this.
Okay. Cynthia, I don't know what was used in 2005 or whenever it was, but I know that Ohio is one of the states that was using DREs, touchscreen, and it possible that that's what you're referring to, because many of those systems have been proven to be, and it's not necessarily that they've been deliberately tampered with, but sometimes the touchscreen, it doesn't line up correctly within it, and that has happened. So I can't speak to it specifically because I'm not sure, but I do want to address one other thing you said, and that is about using a different system to count those ballots. When we do our audit, and again, I reference that we do audits within 30 days of the election. When we do our audits, we do use a different technology. It's not the same as the vote tabulators. It's a completely different system, completely separate. And at the end of the day, we also have essentially a thumb drive that has a scan of all the ballots on it. So we can actually go back and look at those ballots at any time. So even though the ballots may be destroyed after 22 months, we do have that technology now. So I think we take it seriously, and I want to be clear. We do take this very, very seriously. We do audits. We've been doing audits since 2006. We improved the process and the amount in 2012, and as such. Plus, we also have anywhere from 2 to 5 recounts per election year, and I think that we have yet to find any real discrepancy due to the tabulation of those votes.
Let's see if we can get a quick call in from Chris in Tunbridge. Hey, Chris, welcome to the program.
Hi, I have a quick question, and I'm not familiar with what the report is going to be called, but I know that after mostly liberal states like Vermont failed to hand over voting data to President Trump, he kicked it over to Department of Homeland Security. Department of Homeland Security in early March is going to come out with a report detailing out the illegal voting that happened mostly by illegal immigrants. I was wondering if your guest was familiar with this.
All right, Chris, we kind of lost you there at the end. It was kind of breaking up. Secretary Condos, Chris was talking about a report that he says is forthcoming from Homeland Security about instances of voting by people who are undocumented workers in this country. Are you aware of that report?
I am not, and I just spent 3 different classified briefings with Homeland Security over the weekend. They did not mention this to us at all. You know, the information that was requested by the commission, there were red states and blue states. It wasn't one side or the other. It was red states and blue states that refused to participate. And I think that one of the reasons was that the information they were requesting, or that we could even supply them, was not enough to distinguish someone from the voter checklist. And as an example, the Washington Post did a study and found that there were eight Mike Pences with the same birth year across the country. 7 of those 8 Mike Pences had voted in the last election. Does that mean that Mike Pence committed voter fraud? No, it means that there were 8 different Mike Pences out there.
Well, it's an issue we'll certainly be following in the weeks and months ahead. Many thanks to Secretary of State Jim Condos for being on the program today and discussing this important issue with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.